Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everyone, and good afternoon. Welcome into this edition of the Hoop Crew Hour. Once again, my name is Chris Trapicante, and in today's edition, we will finally get to touching on basketball-related topics outside of the Boston Celtics. Of course, we'll circle back to them. But today, we're going to look at Boston College men's basketball and just how far off the map they've fallen, how to really get themselves back into the national spotlight and ways that they can do it by really not leaving their backyard. We'll also look at this past winter's high school state semifinals and state finals that featured four top-notch Massachusetts basketball programs. Can't wait to get into that. And finally, we will turn our attention, like I said, back to the Boston Celtics, and we'll really examine their draft needs and really look at, hey, we're all hoping for that number one or that number two overall pick, but if not Brandon Ingram, if not Ben Simmons, and if the Celtics do not get one of those top two picks, then who are we looking at? Who should they target? What do those players really add to what the Celtics are looking to do? All of that and more is ahead on this edition of the Hoop Crew Hour. Once again, like I said, my name is Chris Trapicante. That guest call-in line today is 646-668-2091. Let's circle back here to Boston College men's basketball. I can remember personally when I was younger, you know, the days of Jared Dudley and Craig Smith, just thinking back to when I was a teenager. You know, those guys had BC men's basketball back on the map. They were the number three team in the country at one point. They were playing in the Sweet 16. That was kind of the high point for BC men's basketball right there for me. A couple things have gone kind of off the rails. First off, when they let Al Skinner go, everything kind of went haywire for a little bit. They brought in Steve Donahue, who was coming off of a Sweet 16 run with Cornell. I'm always weary of those kind of hires in college basketball, just because those guys really, you know, they may get a good matchup or two. You know, maybe their first matchup, they really play well, they're really well prepared, and then their second matchup is maybe a team that pulled off an upset in the first round of the tournament, and now all of a sudden you're in the Sweet 16 and this coach is getting praised. Steve Donahue was not a good fit for BC. His 3 years here were bad. You know, he did win more ACC games than Jim Christian did this past season. Christian going 0-15, but just too much head coaching turnover in the last 4 years. You know, we've gone through Al Skinner, we've gone through Steve Donahue, you know, and soon we're going to end up going through Jim Christian unless he can really wake up and figure out how to hit the recruiting trails a little bit better. We'll touch on that in a bit. But you look at those guys, you know, Al Skinner was here for a while, and no one can blame him for leaving. No one can really, you know, sometimes you just run your course in a certain place, and it's best for everyone to just move on. And I think that's kind of where Al Skinner was at. For me, Steve Donahue, like I said, not a good fit. And so far, Jim Christian, definitely not a good fit. Like I said, one of the worst seasons in ACC history this past year, going 0-15. Obviously, it didn't help. Their best player from just a season ago, two seasons ago, Ryan Anderson, left to play at Arizona. He was one of the better players on that talented team. But to me, there's one reason that BC is not on the map right now, and there's one way that they can get back on the map, and it's simple. Massachusetts is becoming a breeding ground for high-level elite blue-chip prospects across the college basketball landscape. You know, and we don't have to look much farther than just a few names that have recently played and starred on big-name college basketball teams. You look at guys recently, Pat Connaughton, formerly of St. John's Prep and Arlington native, went to play at Notre Dame. He's now in the NBA on Portland Trailblazers. Guys like Nerlens Noel, who obviously we know all about Nerlens Noel. He's a local New England kid. Wayne Selden, another kid. He plays at Kansas. He'll be drafted this season. Bonzi Colson is another guy. He plays for Notre Dame. He was one of their leading scorers this past year. Zach August, a Marlboro native, another Massachusetts kid, went to play for Notre Dame again. And then, you know, just recently, for those of you guys that were really into the college basketball season, Jalen Adams, the kid who hit the miracle shot for Connecticut, he's a Roxbury native, another Massachusetts kid. He chose to go play at UConn instead of opting to play at Boston College. To me, all of these guys, they should be at Boston College. You know, you grow up playing, you know, right in the backyard of this big, illustrious campus, you know, this big, illustrious institution of Boston College, and they're going across the country, you know, to Kentucky, or they're going to Notre Dame, or they're going just up the road to UConn. You know, these kids should be staying in the backyard. You know, and if Boston College had even three of those guys that I just named, three out of the seven, you're definitely not in the position you're in. You're probably an NCAA tournament team. You know, so to me, Boston College doesn't really need to look too much farther than the fact that they need to do a better job recruiting kids in their area. Like I said, Massachusetts is turning into a breeding ground of elite, high-level, blue-chip talent. And to me, BC has to find a way to dive into that pool. You know, I don't know how much they're really going into those guys. You know, I don't even know if Boston College made an honest effort to get any of those guys. You know, I remember Pat Connaughton. I know BC was in on him. Other than that, I really don't know. But to me, I mean, there are guys right now that you see on the high school landscape that are going to be eventual Division I players, Division II players. And then you have all these prep schools that pop up all over Massachusetts with the ISL League. I mean, these guys need to be contacted by BC. BC needs to make a play for these guys. And I wrote an article about this on our HC Rundown website. Well, Boston College needs to get on this. You know, there's no way that all of these kids that are Massachusetts native have gone on to play now in the NBA, have gone on to play in the Elite Eight, Final Four, whatever it may be. There's no way these kids should be getting out of the state of Massachusetts. They should be staying home and playing for a school like BC that they may have grown up watching on TV. Maybe you have, you know, went to some of their games growing up. All of these kids would have transformed that BC program or kept the tradition that they were building under Al Skinner moving forward. And that's why I just think a guy like Steve Donahue was such a letdown. You know, you look at guys like Nerlens Noel, who was one of the top five recruits in the country. You know, he went to Kentucky. No one's going to blame him for that. But when you're sitting at a recruiting pitch and it's between John Calipari, who's putting kids in the NBA every single season, and a guy like Steve Donahue, I mean, I can't blame a kid for making that decision. I mean, the right decision is obvious. You know, you go to Kentucky, you go with John Calipari. That's why I think Boston College has it all wrong. You know, they're hiring these coaches from small-name schools. You know, what about hiring a coach from a big-time prep school in the area? You know, what about hiring a coach that has some name recognition, has a track record? You know, something like that, that's what BC needs. BC has to find a way to get its foot in the door with these high-level recruits, or we just won't hear about them again. You know, the Steve Donahue's and the Jim Christians, you know, they're probably great guys. They probably know what they're talking about when it comes to X's and O's. But if you don't have the talent, if you don't have the players, it doesn't matter. You can be the best X's and O's coach you want. But if you don't have the guys to put the ball in the hoop, to get a stop, to read a screen correctly, to get a rebound, to make a play, none of it matters. You know, and that to me is the biggest glaring hole of Boston College. You know, and I will admit I did watch some BC games this past season, and their lack of talent was alarming. You see them play teams like Duke, and obviously Duke's an extreme example, but even a team a little bit, you know, further down the totem pole. We look at like a team like Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech has so much more talent than BC, and Virginia Tech was still an iffy 500 team. BC, of course, wasn't even close to a 500 team. But you get what I'm saying there. Boston College, you know, there's no way these kids should be leaving their backyard. And to me, it's an easy fix. You have to recruit Massachusetts better. You have to find a way to get them. And I think it's worth making a phone call to a high-level prep school coach in the area and saying, hey, do you have any interest in this position? Do you want to maybe be an assistant coach at Boston College? I'm not saying you hire a prep school guy to be your head coach, but maybe you throw him on the staff. Memphis, whose coach Josh Pastner just left to go coach at Georgia Tech, Memphis hired Dedrick Lawson's father, who was a high-level high school coach, just to find a way to entice Dedrick Lawson, who was a very highly touted recruit, to come to Memphis. He ended up really having a great year. He's going to be drafted this season. That's what Boston College needs to do. They have to think outside the box. I feel like they are so constrained to thinking inside the box here that it's really hurting them. It's really putting them in a tough spot. The only way to compete in a conference that holds North Carolina, that holds Duke, that holds Notre Dame, that holds Louisville, you need to get high-level talent in here. If you don't, you're never going to have a winning record. To me, Massachusetts is where they need to start. I know it sounds simple, but there are so many high-level talent guys in the state of Massachusetts right now, whether it's public or prep schools, you need to find a way. You know, and I didn't even mention Jake Lehman, who played at King Philip Regional High School and now was a star for Maryland, and he'll be drafted. You know, so there's just names everywhere. And to me, it's an easy fix for Boston College. You need to start recruiting the Massachusetts area. let's turn our attention now, as we've been talking about who Boston College needs to recruit in the high school landscape, let's actually turn our attention to the high school landscape. Let's look at this past winter's high school state semifinals and state finals. That really was just a treat for all basketball fans out there, really. It featured four prominent Massachusetts basketball powerhouse programs. You had the eventual champion Cambridge Ringe and Latin. You had Catholic Memorial, who went on a torrid three-year run, one of the best three-year runs in Massachusetts high school hoops history. You had the prestigious St. John's of Shrewsbury, who just every year continues to win, finds ways to win district championships year in and year out. And finally, you had Putnam, who kind of emerged on the scene in 2013, and since then have really found their way into the state semi and state final landscape the next 3 or 4 years. So William Shepherd really building something special in Putnam in Springfield, Massachusetts. Let's look at the first game. The first game really was the most highly touted game in quite a while in Massachusetts hoops. It was Catholic Memorial, Cambridge, Ringe, and Latin. That game took place at the TD Garden. CM, obviously the defending state champions from a season ago, a team that featured Julian Smith, who ended up becoming a Division I player at Dartmouth, a guy like Kellen Grady, who ended up becoming or will become a Division I player now at Davidson. Two more names Boston College from Missoula, by the way. You know, they also featured Brandon Twitty, who will be a player at Stonehill, and Matt Hanna, who was post-gradding at Vermont Academy. All of these guys really formed just a dynamic scoring punch. CM was scoring in the eight, upper 80s, 90 points almost. It seemed every game last year on the way to a state championship. They lost Smith to graduation. Kellen Grady moved on to Northfield Mount Hermon, local prep school here in Massachusetts. So they were left with Twitty, they were left with Hannah. They had a terrific season. But Cambridge Ringe and Latin came locked and loaded, led by ESPN Mr. Basketball, Jaquie Dotton. Terrific point guard. He will also end up being a Division I player. You know, they just had so much length, so much talent. They caused a lot of problems for CM. They were the one team that I saw that could really match up with CM's run and run and run pace. And to me, that's kind of the reason why they knocked him off. It was a terrific game, back and forth baskets, big shots, you know. And it wasn't just the big-name guys. You know, you obviously had guys like Twitty and Matt Hanna and Jaquie Dotton making big plays for their teams because they're high-level players. But you had X-factors in that game, too. You know, there were guys coming off the bench for Cambridge Ringe and Latin hitting big shots, getting their hands on balls, getting deflections, getting out in transition. It was really just a game to watch, and I'm so happy I got to watch it. You know, just to see those guys firsthand, just to see that Cambridge team specifically firsthand was really a treat. They were a terrific team. Like I said, Cambridge ended up winning that game. A tough way to go out for CM, you know, but a team that won three consecutive self-sectional finals, a team that made it to two consecutive state finals prior to their state semifinal defeat, really a three-year run to be proud of, one of the most prolific high school hoop dynasties in a very, very long time. So nothing to hold your hat on with CM. It was just Cambridge's time, and the scary part about a team like Cambridge Ringe and Latin is they will be the number one team next season going into the preseason. They will be the favorite to repeat as Division I state champions. They bring back everybody. Their entire team is back. They lost one role player off of the Division I state championship team. That team is going to be scary good next season. I would be shocked if they do not win the Division I state title. Let's move on to the second state semi. It was between St. John's and Shrewsbury and Putnam. Putnam, like I said, burst onto the scene in 2013 under head coach William Shepherd, really transformed that program. They featured some very, very high-level talent. They ended up winning back-to-back state titles back-to-back state titles. They were just a juggernaut of a team. They made it to three consecutive state finals. They were going for a three-peat, but CM did knock them off. It was a matchup that with St. John's and Putnam that a lot of people said, okay, this is going to be Putnam. It's going to be Putnam against the winner of that epic showdown, you know. St. John's came out on fire. St. John's really led the entire game, didn't give Putnam any room to breathe. St. John's ability to shoot the basketball was on full display. They were a great offensive team the entire season. They really put the clamps down on Putnam on the offensive end. It really, really made them uncomfortable the entire way. It's tough to play from behind, especially in such a high-level game in a gym. you've never played in a venue like the TCU Center or the Mass Mutual Center, it's tough. It's tough. And especially when you get down early, you know, and you have to claw and claw and claw your way back, the pressure's constantly on you. And to me, St. John's played that game correctly. They came out and they shot the lights out and they said, okay, if you're going to beat us, you know, you're going to have to give us your best effort, your A-plus effort. And St. John's is really terrific in that game, led by Adam Floyd, their tantalizing player who continued his career at the Putnam Science Academy in Connecticut. Nonetheless, the state final, Cambridge Ridge and Latin, St. John's. Like I said, Cambridge had so much length, so much size. It was really a mismatch of effort proportions in that game. Now, that's not to say St. John's didn't have a shot. They were winning after the first quarter. They were kind of in control at halftime. But out of the gates after halftime, Cambridge really put their foot down. They dominated for most of that second half. They ended up pulling away, winning by 15 or 16 points in that state final game. Jaqui Dotton was huge for Cambridge. A little bit undersized at the point guard, but boy, does he make it up with his toughness, with his playmaking ability. He's just a gamer. He's a pit bull of a point guard, and those are the kind of kids that you love to coach. And like I said, Cambridge was able to capture the Division I state championship this season over St. John's of Shrewsbury. St. John's has always been a good program. Cambridge has always been a good program, especially back in the 90s. Cambridge was very, very prominent. It had been a while since they had been back to the state finals, and it had been a while since they had won one, so it was a big, big deal for Cambridge to even get to the state final and then to win it. So a terrific season, and hats off to the Cambridge Ridge and Latin Falcons. Like I said, they'll be back next season as the number one preseason team. Without question, they bring their entire team back. You know, I'm not telling you they're going to go undefeated because teams like that do play a very loaded schedule. But to me, it's a team that very, in very many people's minds, should be the state champion next season as well. So that'll be something to keep an eye on as we move forward. Obviously, I like to mix in the high school talk a little bit here. Obviously, I know it's May. Some of the events that we will be going to and running podcasts from will be able to talk more predominantly about high school hoops and some of the players' names and some of the teams that we see over the summertime. But it's good to mix it in every here and there. You know, in the wintertime, obviously, we'll have a lot of exclusive podcasts talking about specific games and players during the high school season. So we look forward to that. But I just wanted to touch on this past winter's high school state semis and state finals. That was really, really a treat for any of us big-time basketball fans here in Massachusetts. Finally, in the last segment of the show here, let's turn our attention back to the Boston Celtics. I know we've talked about it the last 2 days, kind of their off-season preview, who they should be looking at, players that they should target, who they really should be focusing on. And everything we've kind of circled back to has had a lot to do with the draft and the fact that the Celtics really, really, really are relying on the ping pong balls this year, more so than ever. You know, obviously, the Tim Duncan draft stands out because they really thought they had a shot at what was or what is considered the best power forward to ever play the game. We look at the Greg Oden, Kevin Durant draft. You can believe what you want to believe. Danny Ainge says he would have picked Kevin Durant. Obviously, it's easy to say that when you don't have the pick and you see 5-6 years later how that all turned out. But, you know, that was another important draft. They fell all the way to fifth. And I remember the devastation that was just everywhere. I know a lot of fans had their hearts set on Greg Oden as the next Bill Russell. So I remember when they fell to fifth and, you know, you go from Greg Oden or Kevin Durant to absolutely blue chip campus prospects to the likes of Jeff Green, Eji Onlinon, where other names you were hearing. So it was really not a good scene in Boston when that happened. And, you know, this year is much the same. Can the Celtics finally get a role their way with the ping pong balls? Can they get a shot at Brandon Ingram? Can they get a shot at Ben Simmons? One or two, no one's really picky about where that is. Obviously, you get the first pick, you get your pick of the two, you pick of the litter. Obviously, that's the ideal spot. But number two, you're still getting one of those guys no matter what. I think trade talks would ramp up. The more I'm hearing, the more the Celtics may be looking at just making that pick and then playing out the offseason to see what happens. But to me, I think we need to look at other avenues here. You know, if not Brandon Ingram, if not Ben Simmons, then who? Okay, so let's play out a few scenarios here. Let's say the Celtics do not get the first or second pick. Let's say they pick third, right where their odds are, right where they finish the season, third best chance to get the number one pick. Let's say they stay there at number three. You look at some of the guys on the board. Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield, Dragan Bender, Chris Dunn, Henry Ellenson. Those are some of the names that you'll see kind of popping up in that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 range. All those guys will be kind of your second-tier guys behind Ingram and Simmons. To me, the guy that stands out in that group is Jamal Murray. I think Jamal Murray fits what the Celtics need. They need a scoring guard. Jamal Murray is a scoring guard. He averaged 20 points a game at Kentucky, shot nearly 42% from three, which the Celtics, we know the Celtics need some guys who can put the ball in the hoop from the perimeter. The one thing I do like about Murray is his international experience. He played professionally in Canada for many years before coming over to play for Kentucky. He has that international experience, that international toughness. A lot of games you watched this season where maybe teams were focusing on taking Jamal Murray out, he still found ways to impact the game, whether it be by hitting a big shot or making a big play for his team. A lot of those things I really like about Jamal Murray. I think he'd be a great fit here and really would just give the Celtics probably the best young backcourt in the NBA between Thomas, Bradley, Smart, and then a guy like Jamal Murray. Another guy you have to consider is National Player of the Year, Buddy Hield. You know, Buddy is, man, he is a talent. That guy can shoot the rock flat out. He's a terrific scorer, terrific shooter, by far the best shooter in college basketball this past season. Shot nearly 47% from three, averaged 26 points a game, led Oklahoma on a terrific run to the Final Four. Buddy Hield is an interesting name for me. I think a guy like him, his ceiling may not be as high as someone like Jamal Murray, but his floor is significantly higher than a guy like Jamal Murray. Like, I think if Buddy Hield doesn't become a star in this league, I think Buddy Hield is still going to carve out a role. I think of a guy like Jody Meeks, someone like Buddy Hield, if he doesn't become that elite-level superstar. But Buddy Hield is a name you'll hear a lot about. Again, he can shoot the ball, and he would just add to that Celtics backcourt. So he's another name to look at in that 3, 4, 5, 6 range. The guy you'll hear a lot about, kind of the international man of mystery, is Dragan Bender from Croatia. A lot of people will kind of say, hey, you know, we got to give this guy a shot. You know, look at the success Porzingis had last season. A lot of times with these European bigs, you kind of hit once, and then you got to kind of stay away. You know, you see guys popping up all over the place. Like, I remember Washington a few years back had the fourth pick. They took Jan Vesely, and no one in this generation has even heard of him. You know, the Sixers take a guy like Dario Saric, and he's yet to even come over to the NBA. That picking that high and picking a guy like Dragan Bender scares the heck out of me. And I don't think it's a route the Celtics should go. I know Danny Ainge was very high on Kristaps Porzingis last year, so I can't rule it out. You know, and there was a reason a lot of people booed the Kristaps Porzingis pick. There was a lot of reason people were skeptical of it, because the success rate of Europeans getting drafted that high and coming over to the pros is low. You know, Porzingis is a rare exception to the rule. You know, he did have a terrific season, but to me, I'm staying away from Dragan Bender. I think if you get to 5 or 6, the value becomes a little bit different. Obviously, that's worst-case scenario for the Celtics. So, to me, if they're in that 3-4 range, I think you really, really need to look heavily at those two guards, Jamal Murray and Buddy Hield. Another guy I like a lot, you know, is Henry Ellenson. Ellenson played at Marquette. He's a big 6'10". He can dribble the ball and puts it on the floor. He's a decent three-point shooter, but his playmaking ability, his ability to score from the block is really what separates him in this draft class. So think of him as somebody with a very high ceiling. I think if he can consistently knock down that three-point shot, you have a legit NBA stud on your team. If he can't, you're probably still looking at a productive NBA player who could carve out a role, maybe something similar to a David Lee type player. He's more athletic than David Lee, but similar in that regard there, that if he doesn't develop a three-point shot, he still has a game that can translate to the NBA level. So Henry Ellenson would be a nice pick. I think he would probably take some time. He's probably a 2-year development project. You know, that's not to say he couldn't step in and play right now, but I don't think he's a heavy minute rotation guy, heavy minute starter for this team next season if he was drafted there. But he's a guy that is intriguing. I think his ceiling is very, very high. You know, and he's a name that Marquette, you know, Marquette didn't really make too much noise this past season. But Ellenson was a big, big-time recruit, and I think he's somebody that the Celtics would have to seriously consider, especially because they don't really have much else in their front court. Ellenson blocks shots as well. He's a very good athlete. So Henry Ellenson is a name I like a lot for the Celtics. We'll see how much stock they you know, put into his college prospects and maybe his potential growth as a player, but he's a name I really like Finally, Chris Dunn was another name I mentioned. I'm not sure Chris Dunn has a fit on this team as currently constituted. Could he be, you know, the starting version of Evan Turner? Possibly. You know, I think the Celtics would definitely do – it would do Isaiah Thomas some good to not have the ball in his hands all the time. I think we saw in the Atlanta series how good of a player he is without the ball in his hands as well. So Chris Dunn does make some sense in that retrospect. To me, you know, it kind of – the Chris Dunn pick would hinge on what the Celtics really think of Marcus Smart. You know, I think Marcus Smart can handle the ball, but has it developed to a point where Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge are comfortable saying, okay, we don't need to pick a player who can handle the ball because we have Marcus Smart, who in a pinch can handle the ball. You know, that's a question that will be answered over time. We'll see if his ball handling has developed to a point where they feel comfortable enough moving forward with him as that primary ball handler. Like I said, you know, I don't really see a fit on this team for Chris Dunn, but the names I like in that range are really Jamal Murray, Henry Ellenson, and Buddy Hield, obviously, if they're not able to get a shot at Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons. We're going to wrap the show up really quick, but we have had people asking, you know, okay, if you're the Celtics, you know, we have a couple people popping up here on the live chat. If you're the Celtics, are you taking Brandon Ingram or are you taking Ben Simmons with the number one pick? Like I've said in the past couple podcasts we've done, I am a Ben Simmons guy. I think anytime you can get your hands on a guy who's 6'10", can handle the ball, make plays, you know, you have to do it. You know, you look at the impact Draymond Green has had on a team like Golden State. He's become one of the best all-around players in the NBA. I think Ben Simmons can be a good defender, a very good defender, because of his length and his athletic ability. I do think the jump shot is a little bit of a concern, but there's always one thing that NBA teams will dismiss as something that can always be worked on, and that is a jump shot. You know, to me, I think either of them really fits with what the Celtics want to do. I think if you look at Brad Stevens, he had Rajon Rondo in his first year. He was a ball-dominant point guard. Ben Simmons is a ball-dominant player. He really needs to have the ball to be successful. He's not a good spot-up shooter. But if Ben Simmons is 6'11", 6'10", whatever he is, running pick and rolls, I have a hard time believing he's not going to be able to get to his spot. At that size, at that strength, with that passing ability, I think he'd be a good fit in that retrospect, that he would give the Celtics kind of that alpha male to kind of build their team around. But with Brandon Ingram, Brad Stevens does run a equal opportunity offense. Brandon Ingram is the kind of guy who can come off of screens. He can play in the pick and roll a little bit. He's a very good spot-up shooter. So it's really tough because I think Ben Simmons is NBA ready right now. I think he could make a very good impact on this team and make them better next season. Brandon Ingram might make them better 3 or 4 years down the road because he could be an elite level scorer at that point. But 3 or 4 years down the road, who's to say Ben Simmons has not developed a jump shot and is already an elite level scorer. So I think the Celtics really need to weigh that, you know, who fits more into what they want to do personality wise, culture wise. That plays into it a lot as well. We know Ben Simmons has some personality and culture concerns at LSU. So we'll see how important that is. You know, the Celtics love to pick guys that play the right way. Marcus Smart plays the right way. Bradley plays the right way. Terry Rozier plays the right way. They really have an affinity for those kind of guys. And this will be the first time that they really had a crack with Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge picking a blue chip player like Ingram or Simmons. To me, I think if they got the number one pick, you know, I hate to say this, but I just think you take the surest bet. And Ben Simmons, to me, is the surest bet to be the elite-level superstar the Celtics are looking for. Now, if they pick Brandon Ingram number one, I'm not going to throw my remote through the TV. I really don't know if you can go wrong in this instance, but I think Simmons would provide something of a quick fix for the Celtics, as well as providing that long-term elite-level superstar that they are looking for. I could be totally wrong, but that's just my opinion. So if I'm the Celtics, I have the number one pick. I'm going Ben Simmons with that selection. That'll do it for this edition of the Hoop Crew Hour. Again, we hope you enjoyed yourself. I certainly did. It was another great day talking hoops. We touched on BC men's basketball, this past winter's high school state semifinals and state finals, and then we turned our attention to the Boston Celtics. We will chat again in the coming days. As the Celtics prepare for the draft lottery on Tuesday night, we will definitely talk about that in the coming days and where they finish. And other than that, I hope you guys have a great day. Goodbye.